Hey guys, it's Jessica, founder of Noonday Collection. Welcome to the You Matter podcast. On this podcast, I want you to get ready to be inspired to be more courageous and to own your worth. Get ready to feel connected to the artisan community and to the community where you have a place of belonging, the ambassador community. Because the truth is, you matter, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to the conversation. Guys, welcome to episode 51 of You Matter. And this month in November, we are celebrating National Adoption Month and World Adoption Day, which is actually on November 9th. And so in this week's episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking with two inspiring women who become experts on the ins and outs, the heartbreaks, and the victories of adoption. Our first guest is Meredith Turing of the Morningstar Project in Beijing. Morningstar cares for babies who are born with heart defects, funds their life-saving treatments and surgeries, and gives them loving care until they can be adopted by their forever families. And Meredith was also the winner of our Style for Justice contest back in 2014. She's become a dear friend, and I've actually been to Beijing to visit her and been to Morningstar as well. So it was fun getting to reconnect with her for this episode. Listen in as we talk about Meredith's experience advocating for these special children in China and about the tensions adoption inevitably holds.
So let's talk adoption. You know, it's for me, you know, writing this book. And so I look back on some things that I wrote that I've come across on my computer when we first started the process and first sort of discovered this whole like idea of adopting. And, you know, when we started the journey, I think we started our paperwork about 8 years ago. I said things like, you know, every single person should consider adoption or at least pray about it. Like it's something that you opt out of, not that you opt into. I mean, I was on fire, right? Okay. And a bunch of us were at the time. It was like something, there was like a movement that was starting. And then we brought all of our kids home. And since then I've had a friend whose child ended up, you know, sexually abusing her younger children and the child is no longer in her home. I have another friend who had a disruption and they found another family for their kid once they got home. I've seen all the hardness of it. And yet for me, I mean, Jack completely changed our life and he knows it. I mean, if it was not for saying yes and you know, going after him, like we wouldn't have Noonday. I mean, there's just so many things about our lives that would be that comfortable place. So I have this hard time now holding the tensions, like, which is kind of how we started off the conversation, like holding this tension of like, you know, I want to still be an adoption advocate, but then I also want people to not romanticize what it means. You know, I want to be able to share Jack's story. I also want to protect that this is his story to share. So let's just have a frank conversation about adoption because you have many adoptive siblings. You have been a catalyzer for other women and families to adopt. In fact, one of our ambassadors just said on Facebook, Allison Azell, that she like played a huge role in your decision to adopt from China. So many people that I know that you have helped catalyze them. So how do you hold that balance of, you know, the messy and the hard, but then you're also still such an advocate for it? How do you hold those tensions?
Yeah. And I totally agree with you. I think that I started from a place of everybody should adopt. We're all supposed to adopt kids. This is like we are called to care for the widow and the orphan. So what are we waiting on, church? Like, let's go. and yes, we have had, I have four adopted siblings, two brothers from Russia and sisters from China. And it is adoption is a broken hallelujah, and there's never a perfect scenario because it always is born out of loss. It's always birthed from loss. And so we have had a lot of struggles with my brothers over the years, just with sorts of trauma-related things and orphanage-related behaviors and attachment issues. So I have seen very clearly some of the rainbows and butterflies and unicorns of adoption that is typically what is put on the internet. And so I think it really is attention. And I really fall into the tension now of how are we first preserving families and how are we making sure that are being adopted actually continue to be adopted, and there are steps we can take to make sure that they get to stay with families. And so I think moral of the story, there are always children who need homes and there are always children who need families. And I think that there are tons of families in America and around the world who are called to adopt these kids. I don't think that every family is to adopt necessarily, but I think we're all called to be a part of something, to either surround families who are adopting, to advocate or fundraise, or to partner with people or organizations that are caring for orphans. There are so many ways to get involved. And I think that each family, if you're religious or a Christian, I think it comes from like if you feel that God is truly calling your heart to adopt. And if he has put that burden on you, then I think we're in a way that you almost can't be from it. If he's truly calling you to that and saying, no, I have this for you. This is your story now. I don't think that you can really run away from that or run away from him, because he won't take it off of your heart. And so it's my thing with my kids is that a lot of them really do have very scary special needs. And so they are typically the ones who would be quote unquote least chosen or least desirable, if that makes sense, just because you're looking at this baby thinking, okay, I bring home this and I have to go through multiple open heart surgeries and there's no guarantee on lifetime or life limits or how many years we're going to get with them. And so what does it look like for me to bring home this baby that I don't know, like I don't have any guarantees on? And so for me, I think that adoption advocacy is, it's so special to me just because I want people to see that kids are so much more than a diagnosis. That I think that when you get that file from an adoption agency or from whoever is advocating for them, the big buzzwords are really scary. Like you see this list of stark information, the cute little picture at the top, but then you're dealing with really scary words and a lot of information and a lot of missing information, honestly, just because you don't always know what what you're getting. And so for me, it's just normal in a way that says, like, yes, they have X, Y, or Z going on with their heart or going on with their spine or whatever it may be. And that is really scary. But look, they like to play with blocks and they like to go outside and they like to swing and they like to be held and they like to dance just like any other children that you would have in your home. And so for me, it's more of a normalizing process of, look, you could do this. They're little people. They have stories. They have hearts. They have lives. And they're so much more than just words on a file that look really scary. And it doesn't guarantee that it'll be easy. It will not be easy. I'll tell you that straight up. It won't be easy. But my hope is that people will see that it's good and that even though it does have the potential to hurt or to break your heart or to be really hard, that it's worth it in the end. And that, just like you said, Jack changed your lives in so many ways. And I always say that my kids have changed my life and they go on and every family is so changed by them. And they're the ones who are blessed. And in my opinion, that the family is the one who is blessed by the addition of the child. And yes, the child is blessed too, to be able to join the family, but it's it's really beautiful to see mm-hmm. when these kids who do have more significant needs or long-term issues, that they're chosen and that they're desired and wanted. And so mm-hmm. that's one of my favorite things to see.
So you are able to sort of hold these tensions by, first of all, promoting family preservation is one way to hold the tension. Another mm-hmm. way to hold the tension mm-hmm. is really normalizing what other people might be scared of. So scary heart conditions and saying, like, this is hard, but you can still do it. And then...
Totally. I think, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I think for me, the biggest way that I'm able to hold the tension is the first part, that we're for the orphan and we're also for the family, and that mm-hmm. we're not out there saying adoption is the only answer, we don't need to adopt kids, but that we're saying, what are we doing to make sure that we are keeping families together? What are we doing to make sure that no child becomes an orphan that shouldn't have to? Mm-hmm. And so that really, that helps me hold that tension, because mm-hmm. I know, I mean, we're so far from being where we need to be in that realm, but work is being done. And I think hearts are sort of changing a family preservation model now, and it's becoming more of a movement. And so mm-hmm. I think we've seen a huge shift over the past 5 years, just in where people's heads and hearts are. And it used to be kind of like you said, like, adopt all the children. We need, everyone needs to adopt. And now family preservation and orphan prevention is becoming much more of a discussion and where people's hearts are focused. And so yeah. that really does help me hold the tension.
I feel like I swung to the other pendulum. I mean, at the same time, you know, I was adopting, but also starting Noonday, kind of already read with that family preservation piece in mind. But I think mm-hmm. sometimes now I can swing so far to, like, you know, maybe it's that kind of healthy dose of cynicism when someone's like, I'm adopting, you know, but I feel like you, I can be like, oh gosh, have you thought through this? Have you thought through this? Like, are you trying to be a savior, or are you doing this because you really want to parent, or is it because, you know, but at the same time, like, right. I don't want that to rob away from being a solid adoption advocate. I mean, Noonday's given almost $500,000 towards adoption over the last 7 years. And I rejoice when families want to adopt, because I, you know, there are still so many orphans in the world. So I love your ability to hold these tensions and to still remain such a strong adoption advocate. What about families? What are some telltale signs for you when you're like, this family should maybe reconsider adoption? Like, not consider it.
yeah. And it's kind of scary, because you never want to be like, well, maybe you shouldn't do that, because it usually doesn't go over very well.
Right.
But I have told a couple families that maybe adoption isn't for them right now, and it's always a hard conversation to have, but I think it's so important to have on the front end than for them to get into something and realize they're in way over their heads, or that it's not what they expected at all. And so I think some of the telltale signs are, if you're approaching it from a savior complex, if you're wanting to bring home a child that's going to be so grateful that you saved them, if you're wanting some sort of, like, feel good, I rescued this child from poverty, or I wanted to do good in the world, or if it's anything that is me-centric, I get really nervous about when you're saying, like, I'm doing this because I want glory, or I want the child to, I want to rescue this child. That scares me a little bit. And I also think it is really important for families to be really honest with themselves about what they can and can't handle. I know I just talked about how I want to normalize things and say, there are these really scary things, but you can still do it. And that is true to a huge extent, but there are certain things or certain conditions that you should really think through. Like, if you have young children in the home, adopting a teenager that has like violent tendencies is not the best choice for your family. Just because that's your family dynamic right now. And, I don't know. It's a hard line because there are so many different families and there's so many different family structures. And so it's hard to know as an overarching rule what would
it really is individual, but you're right.
It is individual, but it really, for me, it comes down to the heart behind it. And when there's any kind of savior complex, it makes me so nervous. Or if people come at it thinking this is the best thing that's ever happened and it's going to be great, and they haven't ever either heard of the adoption horror stories or the realities of the brokenness of adoption, or if they're just kind of impervious to it, thinking, oh, well, we'll just love them enough and it'll be fine. Like they don't, their trauma won't really affect it because we're awesome parents and we're going to be better than that. And we're going to deal with all of that. And in a lot of ways, there is a lot of brokenness that comes with adoption that more love just doesn't fix. Like there is, you want to just say you get them home and you love them enough and it's all better, but that isn't always the case. And that's heartbreaking. That's so sad, but that is the reality of the brokenness and the place that adoption comes from, is that you bring home kids who truly are hurt and damaged. And a lot of times love isn't enough. And so it's also the savior complex. And then if people aren't truly giving trauma the respect that it deserves, or the weight that it deserves, because it can completely change. Like you said, it can completely change your family dynamic, and it can just really be a hard thing to navigate through. And so just being aware and being open, knowing that anything really can happen, just like with biological kids, anything can happen. But when you choose to adopt, you're choosing to let a whole new set of circumstances come into your family. So,
yeah. And I think normally, like, this podcast is specifically for our ambassadors, who I'm always kicking out the front door, right? I'm just like always like pushing, pushing, go, go, go. But I feel like this is a community that it's almost like, you know, having that sort of sober conversation, but while still being able to advocate and say, this is something that you should absolutely consider. But keep all of these things in mind. I know you've had an immense amount of heartbreak over the course of this last year specifically. And so I don't want to end on that. I know that you get asked, like, how do you hold that tension of grief and hope? But I would love to share, because this, the story of Ruby, because that's someone who I prayed for and I think has been such a hopeful story. So why don't you share about Ruby?
Yeah. And it's actually crazy that you asked about her, because Ruby is right now actually on an airplane headed to Disney World for her Make-A-Wish trip.
So, whoa.
That's really exciting. But Ruby is, she's been home now for a year, for almost a year and a half now. And so she was kind of my heart baby. And so I loved her. And she had one surgery with me when she was 5 months old, and she has a really complicated heart condition. And so she did well in her first surgery, but as she got older and grew, she started to get more purple and struggle more with activity and struggle with just kind of simple activity. You could tell she just was not feeling well. And we had taken her over and over to the doctors, and they had said, like, her heart is too complicated. We really don't think we can do surgery. It's not worth the risk. This is really scary. I think that you just need to take her home on hospice and say that, just make her comfortable and you've done all you can. And so actually the day that you guys landed in China, Ruby sort of, she became unresponsive at our baby home, and we rushed her to the hospital, and we did CPR, and we gave her oxygen, and they were able to keep her alive while they kind of talked to us and just said, listen, the options are not good. She's not a candidate for the surgery that she needs next. There aren't really any good options for her. We think that this is it, and you just need to say goodbye. And there are some kids where I feel like that is truly the case, where we've done all we can, we've exhausted all of the options, and you do just want to make sure they're comfortable and know that they're loved. And with Ruby, I just did not have that peace at all, and I just felt God saying, like, we need to keep fighting for Ruby, we need to fight for Ruby. And so I went and conferenced with all of the surgeons and said, I know that you don't want to do this kind of surgery, but can we try to do a central shunt instead? And can we, is there any way that this will work for her heart? And they said, no, we don't think so. But they agreed to try. And so they took Ruby into surgery, and they told me that it was a 25% chance success rate for her surgery. And they took her in, and after about 8 hours in surgery, they called me and they said that she had survived surgery and she did really well, and she was in ICU, and she did amazingly well. And it wasn't a fix necessarily, it sustains her life, but her heart, it's a palliative surgery, and so she can never have a fully repaired heart. She'll just continually have surgeries as the years go by to kind of help her heart sustain its function. But this one gave her a solid 2 years until her family was able to come and get her and bring her home. And then she just had her third open heart surgery about 6 months ago with her family in Birmingham. And so she's like a little miracle girl. She was so purple. She was my little blueberry. And then after surgery, the first time I walked in, it just made me cry when I saw her fingers that were so pink. And I had never, ever, ever in my whole life and her whole life seen her that pink and her lips that pink. And so
wow.
It was just amazing to see this little picture of hope in this baby. And the story doesn't always go that way. And as the years have gone by here, I've seen too many times how the story doesn't always go that way. And so it's amazing to have those kind of hope-filled moments to hold on to say, this is worth fighting for, and this is why we're here, and this is why we do what we do, because you have the rubies, and you have those pink fingers and those pink little lips that that really make it all worth it. And so Ruby's doing so well. We had a Morningstar family reunion this summer when I went to the States for a couple weeks, and so I got to see about 10 of the kids that have been adopted from Morningstar over the last couple of years, which was amazing. But Ruby's family hosted it at their home, and her name is, they changed her name. Her name is now Journey May. And she remembers me, which is really special for me. And so she lets me hold her and lets me walk around with her. And she wanted to show me her room, all sorts of stuff. So it's been really, really special to keep that relationship her and just see her grow and thrive in a family.
It's awesome. Mm-hmm. So always want to hold the anthem of hope and be an advocate in spite of all the hard. And so I think that such a powerful testimony. You made a really hard choice to go for it, and now she's on her way to Disney World.
Well, I'm so glad that you won that trip, you know, several years
Me
ago.
Me too.
Pretty cool.
Me
so
too.
Cool. And I'm sure I'll be coming to Beijing soon, and I'm sure you'll be coming here soon. So we'll catch up soon. But thanks again for your time.
Thanks so much. Of course. It was good to talk to you.
I loved getting to have that honest conversation with Meredith and getting to celebrate some major adoption wins with her too. I especially just the story of Ruby is one that the miracle unfolded right before my eyes. As adoption advocates, it's just important that we keep hope in our minds and hearts in the midst of what is often a challenging process. All right. So in the next segment, I'm catching up with our World Adoption Day 2015 winner, Shay Potter. So it's really fun today getting to share all of these winners with you. If you were around back in 2015, you'll remember that through a sales of a special World Adoption Day bracelet, we raised and donated $15,000 for one adoptive family. The Potters were that family. And in this conversation, Shay walks us through the experience of getting that phone call while sitting in the airport on the way to meet their daughter in Uganda. And then she also shares some advice for families going through adoption. Take a listen.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today, Shay. And as a reminder, a lot of our ambassadors are new since we launched the campaign where you actually were a recipient of a grant that Noonday gave. So a couple of years ago, alongside with World Adoption Day, we did a collaboration and $10 of every purchase of a certain bracelet went towards an adoption fund. And people went berserk, and it ended up raising about $15,000. And then if someone hosted a Noonday show for you on your behalf, then you actually were entered to win the grant if you were adopting. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you guys won. Someone hosted a trunk show for you guys on behalf of your adoption, and you won the $15,000. And it was so fun getting the call and tell you that. That's crazy. And that's the last time I talked to you. You were literally in the airport about to board the plane to go get your kid.
Yeah.
And yeah. So now we're under a little less pressure right now. Mm-hmm. So why don't you share a little bit in particular about, I know you've adopted several children, but tell us a little bit more about how this in particular story unfolded for you guys.
Let's see. We adopted two brothers from Uganda back in 2013. And then in 2015, it was the new year, and I had felt strongly that we were going to, like, that it was time for us to adopt again. And my husband was like, no, we're not. but he was, like, really serious to where, like, he didn't even want to talk about it. So I backed down. But I still just felt like the Lord was telling us that it was going to be, we're going to do it again this year. So then life went on and months passed, and then it was like the end of summer 2015. And, I just felt it more than ever. And I decided to be brave and bring it up to my husband one more time. And he, it was crazy because he, was like, you know what? I think you're right. And I have already been praying about it for the past few weeks. And that was totally God, because I mean, if anybody knows my husband, he's not, I don't know. He doesn't just pray about adoption. so that was, I mean, that was our answer to go. And, this adoption is a little bit different. I feel like our first adoption of our boys was born out of, a desire in my heart, to adopt and to give children without a mother, a mother and a family. And this adoption was more out of obedience, because we knew what it was like to raise children from hard places. And we've gone through, a lot with the boys. And so, it's not like, you know, going in like, oh, it's, you know,
rose-colored glasses. Right.
Yes. So we knew what we were getting ourselves into, but we knew that, you know, we couldn't say no. So then we started the process, and in, gosh, I want to say in 2 months, two or three months, we had to leave for court. And I got on Facebook for a few minutes right before this call, and in my time hop,
it actually said that it was my friend who threw us the New Day party. It was actually 2 years ago today that she hosted that party for us.
Wow. That's
crazy.
I
know. I thought that was really cool. And I texted her and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm about to get on a call with Jessica. And it was exactly 2 years ago today that you hosted the party for us.
Wow.
So we all, our whole community and our family and our friends, and we were all trying to pull funds from everywhere that we could think of. And my friend was just like, hey, let me do a New Day show for you. And I was like, okay. And so we had it, and it was a Saturday, and it was so much fun. Our ambassador came down from, she was a few hours away, Rebecca Geddings. I think she was three or four hours away, and she traveled for it. And at the end, before I left, she was like, and you're also going to be entered in to win, $15,000 for your adoption expenses. And I was just like, oh, yeah, okay.
Like, you never win anything. Yeah.
Does anybody actually ever win this stuff? so I left the party, and I honestly forgot completely about the drawing at all. It was not anything that had ever crossed my mind again until we were ready to leave and we were at the airport. And we're sitting there. We got there. Gosh, it was probably 2 hours before our flight. And all of a sudden, our names were called over the intercom to come to the desk. And so I brought all my stuff, thinking they just needed more information. And the lady who was up there was like, I need you and your husband to come with me to this VIP area. We heard that you're here for a special trip. And I was like, okay, how'd you hear that? And she was like, oh, we have information on all of our passengers.
That's so creepy. Maybe,
I know. I was like, maybe something with, like, customs. Maybe I marked, like, the reason why we're leaving the country or something. I was like, okay, so maybe I marked adoption on there. And they figured it out. So then we followed this lady. And I just remember, as we were getting closer, I started feeling like something was up. I had no idea what it was. But I was like, okay, she keeps talking about my need to get on the internet, and I don't think she understands, like, I can get on the internet. I'm on the internet right now, like, right, on my phone, so I don't know what her problem is. So we go into the room, and they set us down, and she takes the phone from my hand, and she's like, I need to make sure that you're connected to the internet. She's like,
oh my God.
And so I was like, okay, so get this. I'm like, something is going on. This is so weird. What is going on? And I turn around, and my husband's like already filling up his plate at the buffet. I'm like, you don't think anything is weird about this? He's like, no, this is great. I was like, no, there's totally something off. And I had sent my friend a text, and I was like, something's totally weird. We were just brought into this VIP room. And then anyway, so eventually they came out, and they're like, you're going to get a call and you're going to answer it. And I was like, man, I don't know who it would be. And then, as soon as I saw on my phone, you know, an incoming call from Jessica at New Day, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I just looked at my husband. I was like, oh my gosh, do you even know what this is? And he doesn't know.
No,
he's just like, no, I don't know. and then we answered, and then we found out that we were getting $15,000, from New Day that we had won. And it was kind of a shock, but, it was also just such confirmation for us as well. And we didn't have all of the funds that we needed as we were sitting in the airport about to leave. We were just focused on getting through that first trip. And what we thought that we were going to actually have money left. I was like, why would God give us so much money? Because we didn't really need $15,000 right then. I think we only needed like $7,000 or $8,000 more. And then later on, a month later, we ended up having to split it into three trips. And so it worked out almost like to the dollar for each trip, you know, 5 to 6,000, you know, a trip every time you go over there. And so it was just amazing how it just worked out perfectly.
That's so cool. That is so cool. I know Uganda, the process can be a little crazy. And so, so that trip was the first time for you to meet her, or did you think you were going to be coming home with her on that trip?
Oh, no, we knew we weren't going to be coming home. That was to meet her and to go to court.
Okay.
All on the same trip. So like, oh, hey, I'm your mom. Let's go to court the next day. And then we had to come back. Gosh, it's changed. It's changed so much. We had to leave for like a month or so, maybe two months. And then we went back, for embassy. And then we had to come back again because our case was sent to Rome. And they just basically do a lot more research on the case and make sure it's solid before giving her a visa. So,
and then what's her name?
You were able to bring her home. Olive.
Olive. Okay.
Yeah.
And so Olive comes home. I mean, that's just, I feel like we all get to celebrate that and be a part of that. And it's so cool, you know, as adoptive mom myself, when God does those very clear things, because when the rubber hits the road, it's like when things get hard, it gives you such something to look back on and be like, okay, but we're on the right road. We're not getting off this road.
Yeah.
The road we're on. Yeah. So we're just going to keep riding it. And it helps you to kind of manage the bumps in the road a little bit more when God does those big, crazy things.
Absolutely. There have been so many times that we've used the whole noonday experience and being in the airport as, you know, confirmation that we did the right thing, even if we feel sometimes like, oh my gosh, are we going to make it through, you know, this situation at this time or whatever it is that we're dealing with at the time. And then we're able to look back exactly to that and be like, you know what? No. He confirmed this for us so many times, and there's no way that God was not in this. So, definitely.
That's so great. So what would you tell, you know, about 20% of our community are adoptive moms, and then there's many who are in the process, who are raising money right now. What would you say to some of those women?
I always like to tell people that there's going to come a time where you are going to have to stop trying to be in control and figure it out all on your own and raise the funds and find the funds and go to the bank and, you know, try to add up all of your money. And you're just going to have to rest and trust God. And he always has, and he always will. He's going to provide for his children. And if he is calling you to adopt this child from wherever or however, he will provide and he will show up. And I have never, ever, ever heard or met of a family that started the process and had to stop because of money.
So true.
I mean, I'm not saying that that's never happened, but I've never ever heard of it. And I feel like there's such a big adoption community, and I know of so many different stories and amazing ways that God has showed up in so many adoption stories. Just crazy. Like, he will just pour money like rain right when you need it. So, eventually, you have to let go and let him do what he's going to do.
So good. So true. It's like this grit and grace process, right? It's like, you got to show a lot of grit, but but you got to rely on a lot of grace.
Yes. Yeah, you do.
Wow. And how's Olive doing now? What's she up to? What are some of her favorite, what's she into these days?
She's really into ballet.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes, she is. Well, we found out, well, we had kind of known, but we didn't know really what to degree when she came home, that she has some special needs. And so that's been different, kind of just new for us. But I will say, in the midst of everything that she's gone through and that she still has to conquer and overcome, she is the happiest and the most joyful and loving kid ever. I mean, she will light up a room. She is never upset. She is always happy, and she's always wanting to hug and dance and laugh. And she's been a joy, a true joy to add to our family.
Wow. That's amazing just to hear about that.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, we celebrate God's faithfulness in your life, and it's so crazy. You know, we do these little things like, sure, I'll buy a bracelet. And yet when we do each do just our little parts and like owning our power, you know, even when we think it's so small, it adds up to something that can be so great. And that's why I think, you know, that when we view ourselves as small, it takes us out of the game, and then we don't get to use our power for good. And so I just love how every person that bought a bracelet's like, I'm not small, you know, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And then we get to celebrate in the faithfulness of God in all of life. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and when you give to things and when you buy products, and, you know, people will say, oh, a portion of the proceeds are going to this, and oh, a dollar from every part, you know, there's just so many different ways that it's marketed these days, and, you know, so many different ways. But I, you know, Noonday is just one of the companies that you can trust that money, you know, if you are doing something where you have said, you know, like this brace, you know, the sales of this bracelet or this percent or whatnot is going to, you know, this, that people can trust that money is actually going to it, and it's actually making a real difference in whatever that cause is.
That's awesome.
So, you know, it's not just going into like a CEO's bank account or, I don't know, spent on whatever. You know, you know, it's actually going to where you say it's going to go to.
Absolutely. And then the artisans on the other end of whatever the person's purchasing, you know, so it's such a win-win. Yes. Well, I want to do stuff like this again. We haven't done it in a while. Plus, I am dreaming big, and I'd love to be able to have our own like adoption fund where we could give grants to adopted families.
Yeah.
But at this point, we've given away around $500,000 to adoptive families. And, you know, I'm writing a book right now, and it'll come out in August. And I've so much of our story too is about feeling cornered. I felt so cornered by God and didn't have the funds at all. In fact, it's really funny, but the editor of my book just got me back my manuscript, and she wrote in the margin, like, this is very unclear to me. You just said that you didn't have any money. You're living off of your savings, and then soon you're living off credit cards. And then you decide to internationally adopt. We need a transition here. I think you're missing something. You know? Like, no, that's actually what happened.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and it's such a journey of faith. But like you say, like, God provides for what his will is, you know? So
that's
awesome. Great. Well, thanks for hopping on the phone today, and give Olive an extra hug from all of us tonight.
I will. All right.
it fun to hear firsthand what the experience of winning those very needed funds was like for Shay and her family? Oh my gosh, guys. Like, I really want to do this again. We may not get to give every adoptive family we partner with $15,000, but as we partner with hostesses for adoption trunk shows, we do get to be a part of every family's story in a meaningful way. Those trunk shows are so much more than fundraisers, and I know you can talk to any adoptive mom and ask. They are really a place for a community to rally around an adoptive family, to show them that they are not alone, and that's why I love our adoption trunk shows. I hope you enjoyed these conversations as much as me, and I hope they inspired you to get out there and book some adoption trunk shows. Reach out to families, maybe at your church or in your other spheres of influence. Ask adoptive moms in your circle if they know of any other families who need support. And you can even reach out to local adoption agencies and let them know about the opportunity to host with you. Because together, we're building a flourishing world where children, all children, are cherished. Head on over to the Facebook page. Let me know what you learned from today. Hashtag you matter and tell me what challenged you and what inspired you. Let's always carry on a conversation over there. Thanks a lot, guys.